destroying the entire universe.
Welcome to Radio Free Deimos, an Ixun Draconis podcast transmitting from ASAF Hall at Lake Voltaire on Deimos. A public service announcement from the Deimos Chamber of Commerce. The Halloween party at Swift Crater Mall has been canceled. Parties of over 30 vectors cause axial tilt. Tonight's episode is Radio Free Deimos Episode 5, The Rules of Cool, wherein we talk for a long time about things we cannot possibly fathom and TTI sues us for libel. Also, we'll ask the question, what language are we speaking anyway, and talk about what's cool, what's got us excited this week in the news. But before we begin, let's take a second to get to know our hosts. It's Halloween tonight. Does anyone want to place a bet on the most popular costume this year?
Costumes made of polarized material that is invisible if you're wearing appropriately polarized goggles.
Well, that's got me beat. I was assuming that this year's hot costume is going to be Scream. But I really like Masquerade's new line of sexy shamblers costumes. Their slogan is, go out with a bang and a whisper. So it's good stuff.
I see what you did there.
I need a soundbite that says, I see what you did there. I'd use it all the time.
Just wow. That's all I have to say. Just wow.
You'll be handing out the candy this year and we'll wear the costumes.
Hook me up with some of those goggles too.
The only people here are your hosts. Are you sure you want to do that to yourself? Yeah, hairless dogs. So this week for questions and opinions, which is kind of like questions and answers, but we really don't have any answers. We have a question from Zetero Algera, who talks to us on Telegram. His question was, what language would vectors speak? I mean, I assume we're speaking French right now, but does anybody else have any opinions?
Well, my major thought is that we don't really know. Languages diverge when people can't communicate with each other, basically. And given that this society is created, day one, they had cell phones and nuclear weapons. How much could it diverge? Maybe people at the end of a long, long communications link, people on the opposite side of the solar system, while you can talk to them, it's not real time. So maybe you're not having a lot of ordinary conversations. At huge distances, there might be a little bit of drift, but I speculate that it's going to be hard for, unless you've got something shutting down your communications, people are going to maintain a very similar accents. That's my guess.
At the same time, most of the languages died with the rest of humanity on Earth. So you're dealing with a very small subset of highly scientific minds that probably did come from a lot of different backgrounds, but they would have had some sort of common language just to communicate and research. I suspect that they may have taken that chance to improve the language, as it were.
Like Esperanto or created language?
It's a wonderful time to introduce something like that.
Maybe relevantly, when we look back at the vector's history, going back some 750 years, and now I can put my liberal arts degree into practice, the vectors received a pretty big data dump day one. They were given the Earth archives of cartoons and public television. They had a lot of informational content from the beginning, and they were fed that when they were wee little pups. These signals were beamed back to Earth to show them, you know, playing and watching Big Bird. They may have had a fairly strong wealth of linguistic lore going into their own creation. And in fact, it's known that some of the broadcasts back to Earth were the vectors learning languages. I don't think it stuck around, but it's reasonable to assume that over the 700 plus years, we've developed a bit of a pidgin language, which happens when people learn a lot of language bases at the same time. They can kind of play back and forth and pick and choose, apply rule set A to language set B, find things that work for them long term, develop an in-house language all of their own. That's how creoles are created over generations. But one thing that we didn't discuss was that every vector when they're born, except for those weirdo liberal people that homeschool their kids, has a lot of the base language dumped directly into their brain through the neuroplex. So kind of like a reset button on our linguistic understandings, we have a lot of that stuff dumped into us fresh from age 6 months.
Which simply brings up the question, is it more profitable to have all of your consumers speaking the same language as your advertisers? Or is it more profitable to sell multi-sets of neuroplexes for different languages?
Well, that kind of reminds me of like early radio in the U.S., where people realized, hey, the black market is out there. It's a big potential market. So they're training DJs to speak black dialect, well, and also having black DJs to reach this community. So if a community has a special in language, like we all speak Canadian, eh? That could be a channel to say, hey, I'm your buddy, eh? Buy from Costco.
And there are some in languages. TTI has a bit of status class for Russia, Russian languages, Icelandic languages, that sort of thing. They use it in their names a lot. They may have some people that have learned to speak them just as prestige dialect.
Also, I remember a discussion of Australians complaining about salespeople. When salespeople call you mate, it's like, yeah, lay off the hard sell, dude. Except in an Australian accent, I can't do that. I wonder if maybe, again, I keep thinking about space stations as a potential. Since they're kind of self-contained worlds, they're people that want to be very, very close to each other and can better control access to the outside world. If you're on a planet like Mars or Venus, you might be a town, you might be very self-interested, but, you know, your kids can always go to the next town over or watch TV. If you're on a space station, it seems like you could control, if you don't want people talking to the outside world, you could have the great firewall of so-and-so station. And if you've got some crazy cultural idea, you could really go with it. I mean, I'm kind of thinking of like Alistair Reynolds' ideas of the glitter band in his universe.
Or in the real world, rhyming slang, which was a dialect that existed to make people not understood.
Good point.
England. Read a book.
Yes, read a book and pick up that accent. Wait.
There's not a lot of mention of language in the HSD canon. Usually when it's there, it's meant to show that something is strange and other. So the only languages that are explicitly called out are dolphins before they were uplifted, and the weird, unearthly language that manifestations and whispers speak to each other. There's not really any other mention of language besides that, except way back early in vector history. So my theory here is that the use of language in the HSD game is to establish kind of a self and an other category. We share a common language, like Dungeons and Dragons common. Anything that doesn't speak that is probably hostile, probably from outside the community, and therefore alien.
I'm also thinking of Alan Dean Foster's very silly Spellsinger series, which is the anthropomorphic universe in which you kept running into things like a group of eagles that picked up on Nazi iconography and thought, this is great. These people loved eagles. We like them. Or the mice that picked up on communist stuff because that kind of represented their struggle against all the larger animals, which is an interesting idea, is that maybe all of these animal people of the future might look to the human past for kind of totems to say, oh, you know, I'm a modern hawk, but gosh, I really identify with these Native American people. That really speaks to my personality. I might want to try to affect that because that's kind of cool. Just like in our world, some people do like animal spirituality, like look for things in animals that they find speak to them. That could be kind of an interesting turnaround.
And we have the sum total of the internet for a data source here. So there's a lot of ideas to play with, a lot of conceptual wells to drain dry. So yeah, you have a lot of playground.
Unfortunately, I don't really have much to add on that topic because I have been taking the very boring view of, hey, we're just hand-waving that part because having multiple languages that I can't speak and the players can't speak isn't really interesting. What I have tried to do within the world creation, though, is make a point of using different language naming themes to kind of, like you said, identify different groups. I can't really break out to a different language because I don't, again, speak other languages. But if you're talking about the Mi'kmaqs on one side and the Xiongcheng on the other side, then when you meet someone new, just based off whatever language background their name is from or what they affiliate with, you kind of get a hint of maybe which of the two sides they're affiliated with as well. So while I have been making those call outs, that's about the most nod I've been doing towards multiple languages in game.
I think we can safely say from reading the HSD books that Marsco is the dominant culture of the Vectors, and the naming conventions of Marsco specifically are English language name bases. I think it'd be a reasonable extrapolation from that to guess that Vectors 700 years into the future probably speak something of a new speak with some smatterings of Chinese, Hindi, a little bit of Russian, and mostly English, and a lot of linguistic drift. That just seems logical, a direction they would have developed over time, given that they were formed from a cluster of scientists and the international internet community in their background.
And certainly a lot easier for American players to work with.
Mm. They all speak in meme.
Yeah, lol. I found the HSD skill set to be a little on the streamlined side. And one place that's particularly present is the lack of a language or linguistic skill. I think that if you're playing an academic character, you reach for linguistics as your safe place in terms of things to understand, because it's such a transparent way of saying my character understands something that you simply cannot. In a way, the lack of a language skill set in HSD is part of the look the other way fan service style of the game. Furries don't need to worry about safe sex. They don't need to worry about reaching middle age and having a double chin. They're always young and pretty and safe to play, and everybody speaks the same language. A little Star Trek-y in that regard.
Hey, hippos find that double chin very appealing.
I would actually counterpoint that one. I find that the communications within the skill set is probably one of the stronger ones, in that it breaks it into express, inspire, that type of thing. It abstracts communications out a little bit. It doesn't matter necessarily what language you're speaking, whether you understand each other or whether you're making finger motions at each other or whether you're just typing on a keyboard. The communication part of the skill set kind of covers all of those. Maybe if you can't speak the same language, then that starts flipping into difficulty penalties for it. But whether you're pushing a hard sell or you're trying to get someone to, I don't know, take your dog for a walk, both of those handle pretty well just under the skill set that's provided already.
Talking about character sheets, let's say White Wolf Games, which is one of the earlier storytelling games, has different ideas for what a skill is. There's the instinctive skills like brawl, art type things. There's the learned skills that are drive, shoot, things you can train yourself up on. Then there's knowledge, which is an academic skill set of abstract things you really can't do reflexively, like accounting or understanding C++. The language skill, which in a White Wolf type game is a knowledge, an exclusive thing that you can't intuitively understand, goes back to the earliest role-playing games. I double-checked this. There are language skills in 1975 Dungeons & Dragons pamphlets. The social skills, the soft skills, which are things that you can know intuitively, that are part of your character's attitude and a way to solve problems, I don't know when they evolve, but my feeling is that it's later, that using skills for social conflict is a development that probably didn't take place until the late 80s when gaming was starting to mature away from war games.
Also on the topic of double chins, certain feline species, is that a fluffy mane or is that a comb over?
That would be a comb under at that point.
Comb under, yes.
So on the subject of things that can't be understood, we can jump from here to the most recent excerpt posted to the HSD Tumblr, which is clippings from the Nephilim Codex. This is an excerpt from A Madman's Ravings that are core texts to understanding transcendent technology at its deepest levels. They are very strange raving ideas with a heavy spiritual angle, philosophy rather than local color, a different direction from the city tour that we had last month.
Contrarily wise, He saw clearer than any of the rest of us.
Contrary to that, contrary, he says he saw clearly. These are the ravings of a madman or someone speaking with startling clarity. Totally depends on what side of the coin you're flipping.
And if you're really trying to hide somebody, putting a madman out there to represent whatever it is that you're hiding may not be the worst thing, because that'd be a good way to have people just disregard it as nonsense.
Or create a bunch of cults.
The text does have a strong spiritual element, which is unusual in Vector society. It wasn't spirituality as we understand it, singing hymns and such. It actually was transcendent in nature, like the American poetry movement, a deeper understanding of the world. In terms of what this does for the game as a component of the upcoming lore book, this shows some of the foundational ideas of a corporation, kind of like the guided tour we had through Corptown last week. Since corporations are the governing bodies of HSD and the primary transmissions of culture, this may be really interesting color material for someone playing a transcendent character. Or maybe it's so incredibly abstract that you can't bring it to the game table at all.
Oh, I can already see several ways that this can be brought into a game, both in world building and in background stuff. But it seems to be much more of a resource for NPCs and forces moving both in the fore and the background, more so than anything that I would expect a player to be able to use.
Well, people like to play Luna Lovegood.
And this gives some interesting ideas for how transcendent technology operates as well, and the philosophies behind it, which we are going to go into substantial depth tonight. So maybe this isn't the time, but the document talks about how the science of transcendent technology is one of reaching new levels of understanding that are entire standard deviations away from what we understand, what we perceive on a daily basis. The idea of opening your senses to huge new vistas of reality is core to these concepts. Definitely things man was not meant to know and things man was not meant to perceive.
At the same time, much of the text, especially towards the end, also very clearly stated that these are also things that man cannot perceive and that it is simply impossible under our current frame of reference to ever understand.
Do we have the name of the madman in question? Is that in the document?
Taln?
Spell that one.
T-A-L-N?
Oh.
Taln?
Taln.
Is that it?
Taln.
Taln.
Taln the prophet. Taln the all-seer. Just trying some of these out.
Taln may be entirely blind. We don't know. His use of transcendent technology is to develop tools that can see for him, and therefore he will perceive the world secondhand through these tools, which is perhaps a metaphor for children or his own strange concept of divinity. It's clearly stated there. It's not a metaphor. That's transparent.
So we're not talking just cameras.
No. Biocameras.
Okay.
Well, one thing I want to pick up from this later on is the idea that transcendent technology is as far as you can understand to the very limits of your mind. That is one deviation of reality. And then that far again is another deviation of reality. This levels of perception is core to understanding Cool and how TTI puts their ideas together. Barely understood things at our fingertips.
At the same time, even looking within that codex, it pretty plainly calls out that it's an incomplete work. Half of the codex, well, not half, but a decent amount of the codex is put towards almost describing blueprints for a celestial chorus of Nephilim that he wanted to build, or he said he had to build to usher in the divinity or something. Then it cuts off.
So he takes about 700 pages to get anywhere and it's still incomplete. This is Robert Jordan we're talking about here. No? Okay.
I want to be fussy and no fun here when like what he's describing, seeing the unseeable, what man is not meant to know. Again, well, that describes cameras pretty well. That describes infrared cameras, ultraviolet light, which we now use at parties. We have ultraviolet lights because they look cool, and we understand that. You know, thermal cameras are pretty fucking magic. I mean, isn't that also what man is not meant to know? It's just, it's been around long enough that it's just normal to us.
Yeah, he's kind of lifting the language of the 1920s pulp and trying to bring it into the 21st century in some ways.
Although, on that note, while most of us are only using three different color rods in our eyes, there are documented examples of humans with four different types of color rods.
Right, they're the women, yeah.
They literally see... Well, not all women, just a couple of very special examples.
A particular group of women, yeah.
That's why males can't match their clothes.
No.
The same with a lot of animals. Several animals only have two different types of color rods, so they literally see less colors than we do.
I think we're dipping very heavily into the literal interpretation bucket here, too. This is metaphor, spirituality, and philosophical insanity. Really, that's the game the author is playing at, not dissecting retinas and cones.
Fair enough. Sorry. As an engineer, I have to make the comment. I'll drop it.
That's fair.
Well, it's not necessarily dropping it, but to go back into that light, the light spectrum that he's talking about is a well-understood spectrum that we can understand, we can model. And even though our visual range is only point A to point B on the spectrum, we can design things that cover point A.5 to point B.5. The cool in general, and what he is describing, would be something that does not exist on that scale, that exists sideways off of that scale, not off beyond into the infrared or off beyond the other direction on this two-dimensional or one-dimensional scale. This takes a different dimension entirely and is something that is not light that we can understand it, that is still being used in the same way to perceive as light. So, I mean, I do understand the example that's being put together, and the words just fail to describe it because by definition, reality fails to describe cool, even at lowest levels.
We've talked a lot about perception and sense and looking for what's beyond, but I think of the people that have TTI implants that have made the news occasionally, they're not using those implants to peer into the void or see beyond the stars. They're using them to shove things around, teleport things, disintegrate things, cause things to burst into flames. Transcendent technology is very hands-on, very manipulative, and it's not cerebral. It's not about perceiving the beyond. It may be about ending up there, but it doesn't expand your senses so much as expand your reach.
Well, these are the cast-off failures that TTI has marketed to everybody else. They very well put out that these are black boxes. While you exert certain forces on them and generally certain things happen, that's never assured. It's semi-controllable and somewhat expected, but using these forces anywhere near a different implant or anything else where reality is less predictable, as it were, can have repercussions and interactions far, far beyond what you would expect from just a bad interaction, just way outside of expectation.
You've presented some very serious challenges for TTI's marketing department, sir. We're going to give you our cast-off technology and it might destroy everything you know.
And that's why TTI's marketing department is filled with explosions and disintegrations and moving things with your mind.
I want to be an intern there. No, really, I don't. So we're pretty lucky that this topic was posted close to Halloween, close to when you want to talk about the spookier sides of HSD. If you haven't read it yet, the Nephilim Codex excerpt is on the HSD Tumblr. We'll give you the web link to that in our show notes. So after discussing transcendent perception expanding horrors from beyond, let's talk about cool, the topic for the day. I'm pretty sure it's pronounced cool. It's from an Irish name, Finn McCool, believe it or not. So we'll go with that as the default pronunciation. And I'm going to open this up with a brief history of transcendent technology. One of the big corporations in the Ixund Draconis universe. Transcendent technology is the home of weird science, things man was not meant to know. They bring the horror into the campaign when the other corporations tend towards golly gee or
quiet competence.
Yeah, exactly that.
Except in the case of Pulse.
TTI, which is Transcendent Technologies Incorporated, is one of the newer corporations on the scene in Ixund Draconis. It was formed about 300 years ago or so. The story, as I understand it, and a lot of this is not, the story as I understand it is that TTI was formed to explore the depths of Europa's oceans. This is the ice moon of Jupiter, and beneath its surfaces are all kinds of strange things. In our solar system, it's pretty much the furthest point that Vectors have explored and colonized. When we terraformed Venus, this is some 500 years ago, there was a lot of political correctness that went up and around saying, oh no, maybe we just destroyed millions of microbes. We'll never know because we wiped out their atmosphere, and all those sulfur oceans probably were teeming with life that we just couldn't see. Tons of unanswered questions about the level of biocide we created, wiping out a planet and replacing it with a breathable nitrogen-based atmosphere that could support foxes. We've largely ignored that. But in this time of environmental sensitivity, Transcendent Technologies set forth with a new concept for exploring Europa, which was not to terraform it, wipe it out, and replace it with green plants and sunny skies and cucumbers and little lion cubs.
Very, very cold cucumbers.
Extremely chilly cucumbers, yeah. Was to send large whale bots under the surface of the ocean to explore in a more conservative way, not wipe things out, but investigate. It seems a little ironic to me now that the company that has created the most colorful and interesting biodisasters of our time was created as a way to explore safely and cleanly. But hey, the past, what can you do?
Although, wouldn't really a sterile robot be a much better way to explore something rather than a big old stinky whale?
That's one of the principal ideas of TTI, though, is that they are fundamentally a biotech company. They're not into robots. That's a different company. That's Applied Science and Robotics. It's part of the name.
And besides, robots have feelings too.
I guess when robots get infected with the madness from beyond, then you're really worried. Because the whales can't come through the phone system and bite your face.
You don't know that.
Yet.
So 75 years to 100 years after the whales went under the surface of Europa and discovered the monolith, a creation of dark and occult archaeology, architecture, beneath the surface covered in strange glyphs that are reminiscent of other strange glyphs we've seen throughout our solar system at various dark times in our history, we encountered the Whispers. For people that aren't familiar with the HSD mythos, Whispers are creatures from beyond. They're destructive, malign beasts that tear through people's bodies, create strange dimensional vortexes. They seem to exist outside of time and space. Technology breaks and melts around them. They're pretty darn horrible, and they like to kill people. The discovery of Whispers in our solar system was not generally regarded as a positive thing, and TTI was very proud to announce that they managed to capture one alive. This is something around 2525 is my guess. Following the capture of a living Whisper, apparently, and expanded communion with the strange architecture underneath Europa, TTI brought living armor, living ships, Whisperwork technology, huge new advances in gene technology. And this is in many ways the technological renaissance of recent times. We'd had fairly static technology for a while, but this new leap in biotechnology was a huge expanse in what we did. For a while, they were kind of allied with Progenitus as the two big biomedical concerns, but they split up pretty soon thereafter over Vitae, which is a supplement to blood that can save lives or create shambling undead monsters. Take your pick.
Is this Whisper that they captured, the one they brought back to Mars, tried to show off in front of an audience in chains, but then escaped and climbed up to the top of the very... Am I confusing this with something else?
No, that sounds like spot on.
Okay.
Yeah, climb up the top of Mount Olympus there.
I was not sure whether they actually have biplanes on Mars. King Kong?
No, I got it.
I can draw a diagram.
That's fine. Thank you, please. Further down the timeline in more recent years, a single lifetime ago, perhaps 2650 or so, TTI released the Transcendent Technology implants. They were created a little bit after the Whisper invasions and colonization of Earth and Mars. No, oh, wait. Let me rewind that sentence. These were created or discovered, uncovered, unleashed a few years after the Whisper colonization of Earth and Luna, which seems like poor messaging on the part of TTI, but their marketing department has got some very strange people in it. The Transcendent Technology implants are technology fundamentally indistinguishable from magic. They let you throw fireballs, teleport things, and ultimately destroy yourself in huge explosions. This is the techno wizardry of the HSD game, the place where darkness and power accumulate and become accessible to certain types of player characters. This is the technology that opens up the year 2700, technology that brings to the Vectors the ability to reach beyond our solar system into the deepest reaches of space, sometimes intentionally. It's a big game changer in the universe. That's Transcendent Technology's story, a legacy of trying to mine things that cannot be understood and then put them in your body.
Is their legacy also one of lobbying heavily for their products to remain legal?
No. Products should be legal. That's a bedrock foundation of our society.
Oh, right.
Yeah. If you can sell it, it should be legal.
If it kills customers, that's just more plant fertilizer, right?
But that's also less customers.
That's bad.
So the question comes up, how does Transcendent Technology work? Crystals. The answer is crystals.
Blood crystals.
Dark crystals.
Squawk! TTI employees challenging you to a fiddle off.
That's how they establish corporate rank. And, you know, those fiddle offs are pretty amazing. Seriously, though, the idea is that through manipulation of patterns on a molecular level, harmonic waves can be created that react and interact with each other in strange ways and create patterns that propagate throughout the medium that they're designed into, and beyond that, interact with the great tapestry of the universe on a level from the atomic to the galactic.
You didn't invoke the polarity of the neutron flow, sir.
My eyes just glazed over a little bit.
Come on, I'm an English major here. Y'all are engineers. The size of a TTI implant is irrelevant. They just work. They don't take any power. They reflect the universe in some way that changes it.
And implant is maybe not the best word, since it's also really hard to get rid of them.
Well, they are implanted. After that, you're on your own.
Is maybe the VR devices from Existenz a good reference?
Can you expand on that one?
On the surface, it was just a movie about VR technology, but the technology was all very biological, and it involved putting ports drilled into your spinal column, ones that one person was observing. You have to rub them a bit and get them in the mood before you plug them in.
It's sort of an eroticized version of TTI, but I can see the connection. Mm-hmm. Calling a TTI implant any sort of surgery or implant as we understand it is probably a misnomer. Even TTI, the company, doesn't necessarily understand how their products work or interact, and they can't guarantee that you will get the implant you asked for.
Is there a cure for TTI implants yet?
I want to ask the question, is Transcendent Technology a disease, a little later on? Because I think there's evidence that there is, that it is. And it's very difficult once TTI is in your body to get it out again. Even having your body completely replaced and your thought process is moved into some sort of chassis or something like that won't necessarily get rid of the implant. HSD does not explicitly have the concept of the soul, because Vectors tend to be agnostic humanists, if that's the word. This comes close. Whatever a Transcendent implant is, it's something that ingrains itself into your being on a higher level than your flesh and bone.
Even part of the problem you've been having with descriptions here really cuts to the truth and the core aspect of TTI. This is not technology in the way that we understand it. These things are not compatible with our reality, and you simply cannot describe and define them satisfactorily.
For me, it's kind of like a virus, almost a tiny little injection that spreads indelibly through your body, corrupting the victim and killing him eventually, or even quite suddenly. This thing that could be inserted under your skin with a EpiPen is something that can turn you into a gateway for alien horrors and utterly destroy you and everyone around you with without even having the chance to take it for a test drive. It's dangerous, hazardous stuff.
That part is not in the marketing packet.
No.
It's also, it's an injection that lets you invoke any horror movie you care to in your character or in an NPC.
Absolutely. And one thing I was noting is how many different types of horror the TTI implant touches on, which is really relevant if you're game mastering in an HSD game that draws on this technology. You can touch on fear of death, fear of the unknown, fear of the self is possible because you transform into a new entity in some ways with these things and it's not under your control. The initial couple of weeks of having a TTI implant is a period of weird, bizarre hallucinations and barely being able to control what this new thing does within you.
How to get ahead in advertising.
We keep coming back to marketing in this episode, and that's probably important on some base level. Fear of the other is quite possible. You don't know who has these things in them. You can't pick them up with a scanner. Anybody could be carrying one of these Lovecraftian bombs. Xenophobia is a big element there as well. Fear of losing oneself to these things. You don't know where your mind is going to go ultimately. These implants represent a sort of primordial chaos that's very much opposed to the sort of thing you get at an ASR factory or through pulse technology.
They also represent a way of flipping the bird to the other people at the table that like serious sci-fi.
I think the TTI is very serious. It's just not realistic.
Sorry, hard sci-fi.
Okay.
How's that?
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, different people have different things they like, different interpretations that they care for. Everyone gets to bring their own ideas to the table.
Speaking to that, I would not necessarily rule out TTI as hard sci-fi. It is not magic. It is mostly completely unexplained, but it's not just hand-waved away.
It seems like it allows for either interpretation. It allows for kind of any horror silliness you want won't be that out of character. Or you could say, oh, you're discovering something specific, extra-dimensional. You could narrow it down and make it specific rather than just letting it go anywhere that's spooky.
Ooh, I think that would be this may be a little bit of a strong word for it, but I think it's a failure on the Game Master side if you do allow TTI tech to be narrowed down or defined in any way. Maybe not in any way, but if you answer what is cool, then I think you've kind of defeated the point and made a misstep as a GM.
I don't know. I mean, horror doesn't have to be... It doesn't have to be open-ended. It doesn't have to be, no matter what you do, evil will always triumph. I mean, the story could be finding out that, indeed, there is a guy behind a curtain working stuff, that it looks really scary, but gosh, it's just extra-dimensional entities that just don't understand us. Oops, they keep making us explode, and gosh, they sure are sorry. Now that we talk to them, it's all okay. Now, from certain perspectives, that would be a terribly lame resolution. From other ones, that could be kind of like, well, okay, that's kind of cool. At least it's gone somewhere. I mean, of course, once you go there, once you get there, now you've ruined it. Now it's no longer the same thing. But over the course of a story, that could be somewhere you take it.
It seems like transcendent technology and applied science and robotics, the other big tech concern, are two different ideas of scientific progress. They kind of go back to back. One is the machine, the other is the body. And from what we read in the Nephilim Codex, TTI is all about biology as the gateway to the future. Their ships are alive and leak things.
Which is also just kind of a reference to, that's kind of the like, since Aliens, that is the creepy thing. That is just an element of futuristic horror. You've got to have that there.
See, I don't necessarily agree with that, because that does kind of set up the robotic, the technological march of technology as the flip side of the coin to TTI. And I don't think they're diametrically opposed like that, especially when you look into the living armor or the living chips. There is not any sort of internal consistency or regularity or frame of reference or anything that makes sense about these ships. Yes, they are alive and they work, but we're really not sure how, and we're really not sure if it makes any sort of sense for them to be working. And I think if you're going to draw the parallel between the biological advancement and the robotic advancement, frankly, Pulse is a better diametric opposite to ASR in that you do have the macro, you do have the growth of the body, that the replacement of the body, the creation of new types of biological in pursuit of entertainment, but the types of changes and the types of repairs they're making to the biological structure has that internal consistency. It has, this is our biology and we are building greater things upon it, which ASR is kind of doing for technology. This is our technology. This is robotics as we understand it, and we are building greater things upon it. When you get to TTI, it's not so much that we understand this step and this is the next logical step. It's we understand this step and now we're going to jump 700 meters this way into the future and here's our next step. And oh, it works about 70% of the time.
You're presenting Pulse and ASR as a conflict. Again, that makes me think of the 60s, the two different bodies of thought about computers, the AI versus the human augmentation, which really fits what you're describing really well.
And Pulse and ASR are not friends at all. They are two of the big tech companies that people encounter on a day-to-day basis, and they are not madly in love. They don't even send each other angry Christmas cards.
Of course, ASR is engineers and Pulse are marketing people. They can never get along.
And jocks.
And jocks.
In some ways, I think that TTI, well, transcendent technology, is set opposed to the reproducible kinds of science. When you talk about the effects of too much cool, too much of the weird energy that drives transcendent technology, it's usually described as being in conflict with electromagnetic technologies. Computers break down around them, video screens ripple and distort. Cogs cannot as easily incorporate transcendent implants, and those weird multi-part kitsune robot things, a lot of their more refined technology breaks down. They can't do the weird robot resurrection thing that I saw in Battlestar Galactica. The far end of predictable technology driven by electronics and such like that breaks down around the deep weirdness of cool-based technology.
So what I'm hearing is cool is fundamentally incompatible with the very basis of our reality.
Yes. And another interesting place where this is shown is if two people that are infected by transcendent implants have a kiddo, that kiddo may grow up very strange with a living shadow that stalks them and shows the otherness of the reality that lurks behind our perceptions. Ooh. But the powers they get from that let them repress cool. It lets them drop the level of unreality in an area down. So this creature of natural biology, and as much as vectors are natural biology, stands in opposition to the deep weirdness that gave it birth. Another place where the world we understand it is opposed to the precipice over which understanding cool will lead you.
Once again, very Lovecraftian.
Yeah.
Keep hearing that this is just everything scary and wacky rolled up into one big ball. Is there anything that doesn't fall in there? Is there anything weird or creepy that, no, that's definitely not TTI?
To be fair, I don't think that my presentation has been particularly fearful or wacky. It's just been alien squared. So abstract from our conceptions, our perceptions, our reality that is just not explainable. You can take little chunks of the whole seen through a prism. You can take little pinpoints and somewhat isolate it in our reality and then bring some descriptions, basically do science upon it. Uh-huh. But as soon as you try and extrapolate that out, science just breaks down. And the way that people use it certainly becomes fearful and scary. And the concept of the unknown, of course, is its own fear, which is very strong in and of itself. But aside from the weird, crazy creatures that slip through the cracks and don't respond properly to gravity and light and inertia, I don't think that inherently there's much that's just meant to be stood up as like the boogeyman of HST.
I totally disagree with you. You seem like a very nice Fox thing, but I have to disagree with you. For me, TTI represents the deeply alien at its core, it's the far fringe, disturbing unreality of the unknown. In Lovecraftian writing, there's nothing terribly malicious about the great old ones, about those things from beyond understanding. They are neutral in the same sense that the human stepping on an ant was neutral towards the ant. It depends on how you define evil. Evil in effect is different from evil in intent. It's that kind of alienness. However, as it's manifested in the history of the vectors, it's manifested in mass killings, in psychotic creatures and things that tear out of the darkness and massacre those around them. The slaughter of Luna, the owls, that terrible failed experiment, the deaths on Terra are all tied back to the alien stuff under Europa. The only bizarre, horrible thing I've found in the HSD canon that isn't directly tied to Europa and Hydra and that mythology is the brain bugs. Those are a creation of the terraforming process that went deeply awry.
We made this.
It went bad.
One of my frustrations with like magic or, I love fantasy. I love science fiction. But when something can do anything, when magic can do anything, it's like, well, I can't buy this. This is just silly. This is lazy storytelling. Everything should be limited in some way. You get the example of Lovecraftian stuff. These things from beyond that just kill us because we're so below them that they don't care. Well, they're not going to make us feel bad. They're not going to come in and say, oh, you never got along with your father. Now I'm going to squish you. At least there's no psychological torture there. I mean, they are limited in that way. I mean, that's kind of what I personally want to hear is some limit on what isn't this supernatural horror.
To be fair, the Game Master doesn't exactly have any limits either, so. But his job is to make it fun.
Game Masters choose to have limits.
So the question of whether cool has limits, whether transcendent technology has limits, is a little bit open-ended because it's a fairly defined power. The limit with cool is character death, ultimately. The story of a TTI implant is almost inevitably you can do little things really well, but when you try and do big things, you fall into a cycle of corruption where you start to do bigger and bigger things, and then your existence is truncated abruptly. The limit is absolute power and then death.
Well, the other limit is this is not like a power that you can control direct, and therefore it must be limited. The inherent limitation is you really can't control this power. Nobody really understands this power. And I mean, that is a very solid limit in and of itself.
I think the lower player character levels are more like technology, more like a blaster rifle, more like a device that you might have around the house. You can move a single item across the room. You can cause a single thing to burst into flames, or fundamentally the excitation power duplicates a handgun in terms of its power level. At some point it becomes more like a powerful wizard and then more like the end of the story for your character. So at low levels, it is finite. It is attainable. And in the Nephilim Codex, I think that the, Mad Rider rails against the idea of conjurer's tricks. Let me get the quote.
Well, while you're doing that, I mean, at low levels, yes, it is still very much a black box. But at the same time, I mean, we could look at a blaster rifle or a laser weapon and say that that is also kind of a black box. We don't necessarily understand how it works. We just know that if you push these particular markings and put pressure on this particular spot, bright, shiny pieces come out this area. I mean, when you take some of the technological understanding that we take away from it, you can define a blaster rifle as a black box as well. Now, that's different a little bit in that we also have the expectation that as technology advances, you know, we can take apart the blaster rifle and figure out how it works. And, well, we had to have figured out how it works because we built it. We don't quite have that same expectation with TTI implants. We did not necessarily build it. We don't necessarily understand how it works. And I think the black box description is much more accurate for this. That's as long as you push these two colored spots in this order and then put pressure on this spot, bright light comes out this side. And as long as you don't deviate from that, you're generally going to get bright light. But if you start pushing other places or like pouring water on it instead, maybe weird things are going to happen.
I'm thinking a rifle will never make someone fall in love with you or doubt their love of their parents. There's certain things they just can't do, at least things that we think of as a gun or a rifle.
Here's my quote. Transcendent technology is this. It is described in many ways, in many books, by many people, in an attempt to put words to the not green, the not blue, used a color analogy earlier. Useless, in the end, inadequate, trivialized into magic tricks and fire conjuring in order to make it palatable by the masses, who feel the need to understand by constraining enormity into easily digested boxes within their own sensory perception. Even if such descriptions are lies, I pity them in a way, for they are being cheated.
This is the madman that killed himself, right?
Did he? He disappeared.
Well, you know, the official story. Pretty sure at the end of it, it said he suicided.
It's really hard to tell the difference with transcendent technology.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, push it too far. Are you killing yourself or are you turning into a 30-foot tall fire elemental and then evaporating?
Or did TTI just decide that, oh, this guy is blabbing too much and suicided him for him?
So looking at the ways in which we can try and understand transcendent technology brings us around to the topic of cool and cool theory. Again, that's C-U-I-L, not C-O-O-L or K-O-O-L or however you spell that. Fundamentally, cool is not a process. It's just a unit of measurement of strangeness. A five-tier classification system for abstractions of reality. Each increment of cool from level 1 to level 5 is
a hamburger.
Is a evolution of the concept of hamburger.
So how many cool would Bjork entering the room be?
Bjork is only one deviation from reality. She just has some great costumes. Now, what would you call it? A hyper Bjork would be two levels of cool.
That's a lot of Bjork.
It is. It is one Bjork multiplied by its Bjorkness. And this is actually a incredibly stupid but accurate analogy because Kuehl is an attempt to wrap numbers around increasing dimensions of strange in a reality that doesn't handle numbers very well. The reference to hamburgers is tied into the origins of the idea of Kuehl, which Transcendent Technology Incorporated found in an ancient Earth encyclopedia called Reddit, which is a vast body of knowledge from the internet, and we rely on it heavily for our understanding of 20th century, 21st century Earth. Specifically, the Cool Theory article, document, was from a 2008 Reddit discussion based on short horror fiction and such, and tied to an ancient search engine that would troll the internet and return increasingly irrelevant and usually pornographic results based on whatever you originally put in there. So one unit of distortion of your this is really a lot of babbling, and I think we should just play the historical archive. Mini-Me, can you cue up the hamburger piece?
Let's make the cue a unit of measurement. One cue would be one level of abstraction away from the reality of a situation. For example, you ask me for a hamburger. At one kewl, if you asked me for a hamburger, and I gave you a raccoon. At two kewls, if you asked me for a hamburger, but it turns out I don't really exist. Where I was originally standing, a picture of a hamburger rests on the ground. At three kewls, you awake as a hamburger. You start screaming only to have special sauce fly from your lips. The world is in sepia. At four kewls, why are we speaking German? A mime cries softly as he cradles a young cow. Your grandfather stares at you as the cow falls apart into patties. 5 kules, you ask for a hamburger. I give you a hamburger. You raise it to your lips and take a bite. Your eye twitches involuntarily. Across the street, a father of three falls down the stairs. You swallow and look down at the hamburger in your hands. I give you a hamburger. You swallow and look down at the hamburger in your hands. You cannot swallow. There are children at the top of the stairs. A pickle shifts uneasily under the bun. I give you a hamburger.
So there you go. 5 units of Kuehl is a complete breakdown of reality and a deviation from understanding so great that we simply cannot wrap our brains around it, only establish metaphors.
So how many was me meeting that fursuit who was wearing a half lion, half hyena costume up in Minneapolis?
And that was strange.
So that was 0.5?
0.3 or so. It didn't feel like a new dimensionality of weirdness.
Just kind of wrong.
Yeah. I think if you wandered out of your hotel room and you're at a business conference and suddenly found out you're in a furry convention and there was a half lion, half zebra character, then that might start to be edging towards Kuehl 1 because your sense of reality is starting to melt at the edges a little bit.
Sure.
And, you know, there really isn't that much to say about Kuehl except that it is a sense of spiraling strangeness that rapidly recedes out from our understanding.
Do computers pick it up?
There is actually a Kuehl detector. It sometimes gets up and wanders off and devours other lesser tools.
The Kuehlometer?
Did you really just... Okay, I resign. So questions, how do you use Kuehl in a game? What storytelling elements does it play up of? We've talked a lot about horror and alienation. Is it a reasonable thing for the characters to strive for? Is it a goal they can have to reach these levels of weird?
Possibly not, if only because there are probably better games and better systems that are more designed for that type of thing. I don't think that that should be the core concept of an entire party, an entire campaign. It's kind of the shadows around the actual campaign. It is kind of the boogeyman or the Lovecraftian horror that lurks on the outsides of the real world. And if you make that the focus of the game, I think you're leaving behind where HSD's strengths really are. However, it does make a good, I won't say gimme, but it makes a good theme for that one guy that always wants to play a wizard, to integrate them in with the rest of the party doing other stuff. So you do have that one mysterious element that some people seek after, prefer.
Yeah. When I see this stuff, I think of this is for the one guy in the game that is interested in this. I doubt it's going to be a whole party that says we all want to play wacky transcendent characters. There's going to be the one guy that wants to do it. Yeah. So maybe the question is, how do you draw it in without being too obnoxious or dominating the game? Because presumably everyone else in the party is less interested in this being the central conflict. Again, this reminds me a lot of Mage the Ascension. What was the concept there? Paradox, right. But there, everyone's dealing with that. Everyone's creating paradox when they're doing their little magic stuff. Here, it's just this one guy who has this mechanic and probably the rest of the party saying, please don't blow everything up for us. Or maybe they're saying, go blow it up.
Damn it, Steve, you can't be a wizard. There's no wizards in HSD.
I want to argue with this, but I think I am that one guy more often than not.
Yeah, you are.
It's worth noting that our Sunday game does not have any mention of Kuehl at this point. I mean, we have a transcendent employee, but he's mostly kind of doing a subtle man in black sort of routine, not whipping out the fire generators.
And at the same time, that's somewhere where it can come in on the player side. I think it is also useful as a plot device, one of many plot devices, but a plot device. Sometimes you do need something that doesn't necessarily act that the players can forecast or expect. If you want something that is going to implement a little bit of chaos and really just shake things up, that is a good place for TTI or some rogue call to really show up. Because everywhere else, capitalistic rationalism really is supposed to rule the day. sometimes you just need some people that are acting out of, if not pure unrational evil, then just at least pure unrational chaos.
One of my side projects lately has been trying to map out the chronology of HSD. And one place that's particularly vague is when our transcendent implants actually developed. The implication is that it's in the not too recent past, like maybe in the 30, 40, 50 year period. But I don't think there's anything specifically saying that. So you could treat them as the technological renaissance, as the new and terrifying product that opens up this vista of exploration. And the transformation of society is a key element of sci-fi stories, from what a wise man told me. So that's might be a very useful application of them.
I also want to point out that even in the description of cool blooms within the book, the level of severity rapidly ramps up. Even at some of the moderate levels, these type of things are not listed anywhere else in the chronology or anywhere else in the history. Even some of the largest living ships that went sideways create some weird places, but those seem to be fairly self-contained. When you start talking about like the horrors that we're conjuring under TTI. So within the chronology, within the history, at least things that we know about and have been big enough to be seen just have not been major cool incursions. They've been fairly tame, at least as far as we know, which also brings up, if this is so disruptive to reality, if we started having larger cool blooms, is that something that we would even know about? Might that be messing around with chronology in general?
I feel like we should take a moment here to discuss what a cool bloom is. Cool represents, again, a measurement of abstraction from reality, and it tends to spread into an area around you. So an area becomes kind of infected with cool on some level. And when two people start unleashing transcendent technology powers around each other frequently, like two or three times in an hour, the level of weird increases. A cool level of one in a product lets you, let's just use ethereal as an option. A cool level of one might let you phase something in a small area. It might let you pass through a wall or telekinesis something a little bit. A cool level of two would let you move through walls. You start developing a three-dimensional matrix of movement that you swim through space and you're not moored to geometry anymore. A cool level of three, you start to perceive all places as one place. A cool level of four, you can simultaneously be in all places at once, but doing so may unseat you from reality so effectively that you end up being in the great nothing and beyond. So the level at which cool can spiral out of control is very, very quick. Effectively, three or four people having a firefight with their implants would rapidly transcend reality as we know it. Each level of cool in an area jacks up the power of your implant, and you can't necessarily control that. They have to be used at maximum efficiency and maximum power.
You say transcend reality. I would counter more break reality or interrupt reality.
Well, transcend is in the name. Break Technology Incorporated is not a thing.
Again, marketing.
So some gamers will see a system that has something built in like this, where you use your stuff too much, things go crazy. And so they'll just intelligently say, well, I'll just carefully manage the level so this will never be a drawback. Which, of course, it leaves it up to the GM to say, okay, well, I'm going to make sure that you can't plan it that carefully. Because as you say, if more than one person's using this stuff, the one person could be like, I know I can do this and never get in trouble. Oh, crap, someone else is doing it in this area too. Oops. It sounds like they've left it open to play with it so that people can never totally be safe using it. You've always got to be a little bit nervous what's going to happen this time. And that's good. I like that.
And I think that really speaks to the underlying aura of fear of the unknown. You should never feel comfortable with TTI tech, ever.
Oh, no, when it's in the room with you, it stares at you, and that's creepy.
But yeah, absolutely. It's got a level of unpredictability. Even the spaceships have minds of their own and can dart off into the deep beyond at a moment's notice.
I'm imagining just this room full of TTI little bunnies who all born of weird transcendent parents who all suck the weirdness out of the room. There's no one can do anything when they're all there.
Yeah, I think that's actually in the rule book.
I think that'd be adorable.
The followed morphism has the ability to lower cool levels dramatically. So theoretically, they can anti-weird as a flock. This has not been tested yet.
Like a flock, nor should it.
A flock of erasers.
So I'm going to come down to a couple of questions and maybe some other departure points as we uncover them. What is TTI's relationship with whispers, with the aliens from beyond? There's a concept I bring up a lot called canon doubt and uncertainty, which is that there are unknowns that probably will not be explored by the game, to leave them unknown and to leave them in the province of the game master. And these might be them, but there's obviously a connection.
Well, the first question is, what can you sell them?
What can you sell whispers?
Yeah.
Microphones?
Nothing really. You can't really communicate with them, and they fundamentally don't seem interested in mercantile economy.
Well, let me rephrase that. What is TTI selling whispers?
Blood.
Access.
I will say that I'm not as certain of the link between TTI and whispers as you are.
Well, one interesting thing about the implants, a transcendent implant cannot affect a whisper. Can't be done. And there are certain implants that if you have them and they're activated in the right frame of mind and reference to the universe, and you're attacked by a whisper, which means you're already having a very bad day, there is a non-zero chance that either you and the whisper will be annihilated, or every single whisper within sight of you will explode in a fountain of blood and vanish. And then years later, when you're least expecting it, when you're asleep or in the embrace of a loved one or something, whispers will erupt out of your body and go after everyone near you, and you create another whisper incident or not. And you'll never know, ever. There is a connection.
Be afraid.
Oh, yes. Very, very afraid.
There is a connection, but I don't think it says strong a connection. I mean, I don't deny that they definitely both come from the other reality or the outside the reality. They're definitely stains or shadows that are shifting onto our reality from elsewhere. I am not convinced that there's a tight link or a direct link between the two.
One thing you just said that kind of sprung an idea that I've been kind of toying with is that the whispers have elements of the fourth dimension to them. They aren't moored down to our geometries. They can sit on imaginary chairs and move in strange alien ways, and they appear and disappear and phase through things like the extensions of some creature from another dimension. I think they play that up as an image once or twice.
Also, to harken back to something you've said previously, although it wasn't about the whispers, they operate very much like the virus. They find the other living hosts, they leap within them, and then they use that as a source to reproduce themselves.
Yeah, whispers can jump through people's bloodstreams and sometimes layer within their bodies. Again, body imagery and the biological side of things is very intense with TTI imagery. We touched on it. Is Kuehl magic?
No.
Why no?
Why yes?
Well, you could throw a fireball. In role-playing games, throwing a fireball is the very definition of magic.
I can throw a fireball. Give me a flamethrower.
Fair enough. It harkens to a lot of the ideas of certain types of magic, not the hermetic magic, which is rote and rule. Hermetic magic approaches the science from the other end. It's a noble and chaotic magic, like a sorcerer calling down lightning bolts barely under his control. It has a lot of the feeling of game magic to me, and I think that's the ecosystem it exists in.
I believe calling down lightning bolts. Mage the Ascension called that cross electrical wires, a sudden storm surge or something.
That was an angle you could take, yes.
So that actually speaks to my point. I say it's not a magic because magic in almost every pop culture, modern gaming reference follows a certain set of internal rule set. It's explainable. It's you combine the bat guano with the sulfur and you mix them together and rub it on your face and then
don't do that.
Boom, fireball.
Your face blows up.
Yeah, okay. Maybe that's not the proper application, but that's why I'm not a wizard.
Got those out of order there.
But again, it follows steps, it follows rules. It's as closely metered out as any proper science at that point. Most of the magics that we work with, most of the magics that are created are built into different rules, follow the same sort of rules. You can even flip to some of the other common, any technology sufficiently advanced is magic to those that don't understand it, which even implies within that, okay, so we're going to call it magic, but if we apply ourselves, if we expand the scientific knowledge, we will be able to categorize the rules, create the fundamental descriptions of how this works, and we can explain it out. It will become a science.
It has become a religion.
It has become a religion, but religion is not science.
But it's magic at times.
Unless you're a TV prophet. Anyway.
I actually don't believe that it's magic either, and here's my proof. There is no divination. There is nothing you can learn using transcendent implants. You can only blow things up with them, move them, phase through them. You cannot understand the world more deeply through them. And if you go back into the mythology of thaumaturgy, of magic, divination is the beginning and end of magic. Reading the cards, seeing the future, scrying, perceiving the unknown, that's the heart of magic, not fireballs. And that's something that TTI cannot do.
When we talk about magic, there's kind of two different kinds of magic. One is kind of protagonist magic or player character magic, which, I mean, as you say, Ashtar, it tends to follow certain rules. But then there's the NPC magic, the Gandalf magic, or the magic just that's in the GM control. That doesn't have to follow rules. That can kind of do anything. This stuff fits that mode of almost anything is possible. Although, again, I'm glad you point out that divination is not information. That's good. There's some limits on it. If you're being beat on the stock market, you don't have to say, oh my goodness, someone's using shadows to spy on the trades. It's like, okay. They might kill you, but at least they're not going to cheat you.
And we know which is really more important in HSD.
Yes. So characters, you make money because you have a bunch of programs making investments on your behalf, right?
Yeah. You've got a little stockbroker tied to your toggle.
It's primarily tied to your ledger. Your toggle is then tied to your ledger off in the big computer stock market in the sky somewhere.
So if your little auto broker starts taking out life insurance policies on you, should you worry?
Again, good marketing.
No, because someone's about to get rich.
Just not you.
Somewhere buried in the various descriptions of strange creatures your party might encounter but would not want to, they talk about Kuehl manifestations, which are semi-amorphous, vaguely humanoid things made out of weirdness energy. There's a description of them that's compelling. Manifestations speak their own language. They communicate, and they do sometimes obey their controller. Sometimes they operate on their own. Sometimes they embrace their controller and take him away. One thing the description of the manifestation says is that they aren't necessarily alien. They may be a reflection of the user's own mind, abstracted through layers and layers of Kuehl, to become alien. And that's an interesting take on things. The malevolence is drawn somehow from within the owner, the user.
So I wanted to call out two very specific things that you said there. First off was that they appear to speak and communicate in their own language, which counterpoint is a different language call out within the game.
But I did say that every use of language is to create an alien sense, so I'm holding on to that one.
The other one, which I don't know if it's quite in that description or close in the book, was also the description that these things seem to randomly just ignore bits of reality that they don't necessarily like. For example, this one might just ignore gravity and float.
It's overrated.
Or one of the others might just ignore inertia and speed up, slow down with no apparent friction and or sway as speed changes. This, again, kind of speaks to this is not merely just magic or just a reflection. This is this is something that is incompatible with our reality, whether it's just our perception of reality because we are limited, or actually incompatible with our reality. And one of the things that this brought to mind a while back when we were talking about this fundamental incompatibility that is similar yet different is there exists in molecular biology kind of a concept of, I believe it's chiral or left-handed, right-handed molecules. And basically everything is built, I believe, and don't crucify me, it's been a long time since my college entry level, that everything we have is pretty much built on left-handed molecules. And so they all work because they all interact and everything expects everything to be kind of left-handed, blah, blah, blah. But every so often you get a right-handed molecule, which is the exact same molecule. It's just built in a mirror. It's the exact reflection thereof. And it screws up everything because it doesn't fit. No matter how you spin it, it just does not fit with all of the chemical reactions that it's quote unquote supposed to be working in.
I felt like that in the third grade.
If you were trying to fit in the third grade, I'm going to leave that one alone. Anyway, and that's kind of, again, abstracted out, that if you think of our reality as all being set up in that whole left-handed concept, or when you get something that just does not fit, that is similar but just does not react properly to where it's supposed to, that's really how I kind of conceptualize cool in general and a lot of the TTI tech in general. It exists. It's definitely there, but just the frame of reference is so out. It's almost the uncanny valley. It's so similar, but it just does not work. And that's really where a lot of the horror becomes. That's where a lot of the unknown becomes.
So on the topic of insubstantial entities like ghosts not being subject to gravity, all the ones that are subject to gravity are currently bobbing around at the center of the planet.
Well, there's probably infinite iterations of Kuhl that we could spin ourselves off on and try and bring back to Earth and barely understand. But that seems like a madman's journey. So instead, I'd like to talk about what's got us excited this week, this month in the news and such. I want to say what's cool, but I don't want to say that. So what's awesome this week?
But you said it anyway.
I did. My deepest apologies. I have it in my notes. Don't say that.
Well, no. Ours was reporting on some group which has developed little blobs you can put in your bloodstream that... What? You're making a horrible... Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, I'm stealing that one. Okay.
Y'all can share it.
No, I'm sure you remember it better than I do.
No, you go right ahead. We apparently follow the same themes.
But yeah, just little stuff that'll do the job of moving oxygen around your body. Apparently, much, much better than the, what's the stuff, hemoglobin in our actual blood that does. Well, the thing that stuck to my head is that you can keep it dry in a bag for up to 2 months. The notion of a blood substitute that you can keep dry in a bag for 2 months really amuses me.
What's that? We can engineer our bodies better than evolution did? Mm-hmm.
Don't we already have an artificial blood substitute floating around the game book somewhere? Can I be afraid?
I'm not sure that these little modules do anything more than just inject oxygen. They don't zombify you.
Okay. More energy, less sustaining life beyond its natural end. Okay, I feel better about that.
So far.
As a vaguely related side note, I remember reading some book talking about the history of canids, and the author was talking about sled dogs and that their blood is very, very thick. They're engineered to just keep running for hours per day. And he says, if you see their blood, you can see it is different than our blood. It is almost treacly. So just interesting to think that, yes, that is a variable even in the real world.
Well, one thing that I found recently that I'm excited by is another podcast. There's a furry podcast called For What It's Worth that is kind of your standard news digest sort of thing. Lots of chatter, multiple furs on a couch talking about what they think is exciting that week. But every episode they have a little astronomy segment. And the furry that hosts that, his name is Smokescale Aquatos, has spun that off to be its own podcast. So there is a new monthly hour-long-ish discussion of astronomy by furries called Committed to Launch. It's on episode one right now. I hope there's an episode two. And at the moment, that's extremely on topic in my life. So I was happy to see that, and I'm really looking forward to future presentations from Mr. Smokescale.
I assume they'll spend several episodes on the moon and the howling uses thereof.
Yeah, I could see that be very on topic. Well, I guess that's a wrap tonight. Happy Halloween from High Overhead in Deimos. We don't expect to have any trick-or-treaters here because they tend to drift away. So good luck, get lots of candy, and catch the outro line. Intro music is Future Club and outro music is Chronicles, both by Sirius Beat. This podcast is copyright 2016 by Radio Free Deimos and may be used in any not-for-profit project with appropriate credit and notification. Check out our website, radiofreedeimos.com, that's D-E-I-M-O-S, for more rambling resources, links to official and Vanderbilt content, and our full catalog of episodes.